21st century. This is NPR.
From the University of Kansas, this is KPR, Kansas Public Radio.
Support for KPR comes from FIDPIC and their Spring Thing fundraiser concert with Colorado's Jake Legg and Whiskey Mash Band, May 16th at venue 1235 in Lawrence. More information at fidpic.org.
It's 71 degrees in Lawrence, 72 in Topeka. The time is 6:06. News. From the University of Kansas, this is KPR, Kansas Public Radio, 91.5 in Lawrence, 91.3 in Junction City, always online at kansaspublicradio.org. Thanks for joining us today. Coming up in just about 12 minutes, an update of news headlines. Then at 6:36, we will have an overview of Pope Leo's first year as pontiff. He has spoken in favor of peace and the plight of immigrants that has put him at odds with the Trump administration. We will also get you the latest on this big redistricting move in Tennessee. Really chaotic scenes at the Tennessee State House as the vote went through redistricting things in such a way that the city of Memphis is now going to be at least partially in the same district as extremely rural, remote communities more than 100 miles away. What does it mean? We'll talk about it coming up on KPR.
Support for KPR comes from Pines Garden and Market, now offering landscape design and installation services featuring locally grown plants, trees, and shrubs. Open 7 days a week in North Lawrence. Details at pinesgardenmarket.com/KPR.
Mostly clear skies this evening, becoming partly cloudy overnight with a low around 50 degrees. Mostly cloudy tomorrow morning, but sunshine by the afternoon. Highs tomorrow in the mid-70s. Lows in the upper 40s tomorrow night. Highs in the 80s with sunshine on Saturday. Saturday night, another front moves through. 70% chance of showers and storms. We are expecting a low Saturday night in the lower 50s. It's 72 degrees in Topeka, 75 in Manhattan. It is 6:20. Join us tomorrow morning, 5 to 9 a.m. on your KPR stations. Drop in, get caught up on the very latest news. It's a great way to start your day with the latest information. Matthew Algio will be your local host.
Support for KPR comes from the University of Kansas, a research university with 12 research centers and institutes and more than 20 research labs and programs. Information about discoveries at KU is at ku.edu.
It's 71 degrees in Lawrence. News is coming up in 30 seconds. It's 6:30.
Lower across the board on Wall Street today as oil prices continue to come down ever so slightly. This is NPR News.
For Kansas Public Radio News, I'm Laura Lorson with your regional headlines. More than 3,000 immigrants with temporary legal status will be removed from CanCare, the Kansas program that administers Medicaid benefits, in October. The health benefit cuts will happen due to the Trump administration's Big Beautiful Bill. Immigrants losing Medicaid eligibility include refugees, temporary residents from Ukraine and Afghanistan, and asylees who are unable to return to their home countries due to fear of persecution. Kansas Department of Health and Environment Medicaid Director of Operations Yvonne Case says many of these people will go without health coverage.
We expect that they will not have insurance in Kansas. About 1,900 of them are children.
Case says the state will reach out to advocacy groups to try to get health coverage needs addressed. Kansas Democratic U.S. Representative Sharice Davids wants answers from federal weather officials after tornadoes struck the Kansas City Metro last month. Davids is seeking answers about staffing and weather balloon launch schedule changes at the National Weather Service that might have contributed to a delay in issuing tornado watches.
I need to know whether or not they are encountering staffing or operational gaps that need to be addressed.
The National Weather Service told NBC News last month that changes to weather balloon launch schedules have not affected forecast accuracy. Law enforcement agencies in southeast Kansas continue to investigate threats that targeted some schools yesterday, causing lockdowns. The calls were false reports of shootings at the schools. Rachel Schnelli has the story.
The fake calls threatening schools including Fort Scott, Chanute, and Humboldt were nearly identical. The Humboldt Police Department is working with the Kansas Bureau of Investigation to find the exact source. Shannon Moore is the police chief in Humboldt.
We just don't want to let our guard down. We're going to continue to investigate this to attempt to locate the suspect.
The calls were what's known as swatting. The false reports were intended to draw law enforcement to a specific location. This is the second incident in the southeast Kansas area in the past year. For the Kansas News Service, I'm Rachel Schnelly.
Work to create a bird flu vaccine for various kinds of livestock is showing promise. Scientists at Kansas State University say early data suggest they may have a way to protect cattle, pigs, and poultry. Bird flu has killed or forced farmers to cull about 200 million domestic birds in the U.S. since 2022. In 2024, the virus jumped to cattle, infecting more than 1,000 dairy cows. Here's Kansas State Professor Wedaka Mwangi.
So you can see the economic impact. And of course, that has implications downstream in terms of jobs, in terms of food security.
Vaccinating livestock could also protect workers, he says. This is KPR.
It's All Things Considered from NPR.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is NPR News.
Next time on Prairie Journal, the Dalton Gang and the bank robberies that put Coffeyville, Kansas on the map.
Almost literally before they got into either of the banks, townspeople were scurrying around, spreading the news that the Daltons are here and starting to set themselves up in ambush positions.
The unlikely story of the Dalton Gang's lone survivor on Prairie Journal, 7 o'clock Thursday evening on KPR2.
From the University of Kansas, this is Kansas Public Radio, 91.5 in Lawrence, 96.1 in Lawrence as well. We're always online at kansaspublicradio.org. Thanks for tuning in today. We are closing in on 7 o'clock at 7.01. You will hear classics live on your KPR1 stations, followed by more classical music. Then at 9 o'clock, Jazz in the Night with music from the Vinyl Vault. If you're joining us on KPR2, as you just learned from Kay McIntyre, you can hear Prairie Journal. That will be followed by In the Middle, featuring Jeremy Hobson.
Support for KPR comes from the Lead Center, where tickets are available to Friends of the Lead for 2026-27 events, including Lyle Lovett and his acoustic group, folk musician Rhiannon Giddens, and more. Details at lead.ku.edu.
Mostly clear skies this evening, but clouds rolling in late. Lows around 50 degrees tomorrow. Mostly cloudy in the morning, but clearing up by tomorrow afternoon. Should be sunny with highs in the mid-70s.
Support for KPR comes from the LMH Women's Center, offering a variety of women's health services for patients of all ages. More information is available at lmh.org.
71 degrees in Lawrence, 72 in Topeka, 75 in Manhattan. It's 10 minutes before 7 o'clock.
Support for NPR comes from the station and from the University of Maryland Libraries, dedicated to making UMD's research available to everyone and advancing open access for the public good. More at lib.umd.edu. From the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, RWJF is a national philanthropy working toward a future where health is no longer a privilege but a right. Learn more at rwjf.org. From Schwab, where investors have a range of choices to pursue investing goals, from self-directed investing to full-service wealth management, all in one place. More at schwab.com. And from Carnegie Corporation of New York.
Accessing the internet is not a right during this war in Iran. It's a privilege for pro-government influencers. That story on the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
You can hear Morning Edition tomorrow, 5 to 9 a.m. on your KPR stations. Matthew Algio will be your local host.
Support for KPR comes from Peasley Tech in Lawrence, Kansas. The Peasley Promise offers debt-free career training for local high school students and low-income Douglas County residents. Details and donation information at peasleytech.org/peasleypromise.
We're live, we're local, we are Kansas Public Radio from the University of Kansas, KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence 91.5, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia 89.7, KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City 91.3, KANQ Chanute 90.3. Listen on the web at kansaspublicradio.org. Or tell your smart speaker to play Kansas Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us this evening. Up next, we have Classics Live. Tonight, a special piano concert. Be hearing music composed by Bach. Also some Schumann, some Scriabin. It's going to be great. Coming right up here on KPR. Stay tuned. At 8 o'clock, more classical music, then at 9 o'clock, jazz in the night.
Support for KPR comes from the Lawrence Busker Festival, a three-day event featuring acrobats, contortionists, aerialists, and more throughout downtown Lawrence, May 22nd through May 24th. More information at lawrencebuskerfest.com.
We are expecting a low around 50 degrees tonight, highs in the mid-70s tomorrow. It's 7:01. Classics Live is next.
Welcome to Classics Live from Kansas Public Radio. I'm Cordelia Brown, and we're inside the Lead Center Pavilion at KU, bringing you a refreshing piano recital by a young woman named Janice Carissa. She's one of those who makes the hardest piano music sound effortless. From her first notes, you will be entranced. The Philadelphia Inquirer agreed, saying Janice Carissa has the multicolored highlights of a mature pianist. Let's hear her signature clear and clean playing, yet colorful, in the first 10 of the Bunteblätter by Robert Schumann, his Opus 99, or Colorful Leaves.
Thank you. Thank you.
Robert Schumann's music from 1849 and before, calling various pieces he hadn't used before as a collection bunte Blätter, which in English means colorful leaves, as in album pages. Using many piano colors was Gilmore young artist Janice Carissa. Now Janice will play a Bach prelude and fugue in B-flat minor here at the Lead Center Pavilion.
Thank you.
from the first book of The Well-Tempered Clavier by Johann Sebastian Bach, a prelude and fugue in B-flat minor. Next, Janice Carissa will play Alexander Scriabin's third piano sonata from about 1898 that was ahead of its time. There are four movements with some short notes by the composer to go along with each one. The first movement, marked Dramatico, is marked the soul, free and wild, is thrown into the whirlpool of suffering and strife. The last movement ends with a feeling of victory and triumph over those things. Scriabin's third sonata on KPR's Classics Live, featuring pianist Janice Carissa here at the Lead Center Pavilion.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming today. I promise I have prepared a little dessert in the form of an Indonesian music that is written by my mentor, Jaya Suprana. He gave me a lot of performing opportunities and also motivation to learn music and to really learn as many piano repertoire there is. I think we're so lucky as pianists that we could never possibly play everything that exists, but we can always try to know more of them out there. And so one of the piece that I will be, the piece that I'll be playing today as an encore is called Fragment. It's by Jaya Suprana, and it's inspired by the Balinese dance and both slow and fast. So I hope you will enjoy it.
Thank you.
covering a range of emotions by the Russian composer Alexander Scriabin, written when he was about 26. His piano sonata number 3, opus 23, played for us here in the Lead Center Pavilion at the University of Kansas by pianist Janice Carissa, who is currently on a world concert tour underwritten by the Gilmore Young Artist Competition, which she won. You can find out more about her at JaniceCarissa.com. Carissa with one R and two S's. KPR's radio engineer, Chubb Smith, was here to record the concert. I'm Cordelia Brown. Thanks for joining us for Classics Live. Broadcasts of Classics Live are a production of Kansas Public Radio.
A KPR recording made on Valentine's Day 2025. A violinist, Zolt Ader, with Lucy Tan at the piano, from the Carl Goldmark Concerto No. 1 in A minor. This has been Classics Live from KPR, Kansas Public Radio.
At Morning Edition from NPR News, we know you're busy, so we get straight to the point. We go to the people who have the facts, who know the story firsthand, and the decision makers, and we ask the tough questions. So, Bobby, bubble or no bubble?
Is the system ready?
Is that statement true?
Do they have a plan?
What's in the deal?
What does this mean, then, for elections in the fall?
Get to the point with us every weekday morning.
Morning Edition is here for you weekdays on KPR from 5 to 9 a.m. Support for Classics Live on KPR comes from Cromwell Solar since 1982, installing independent energy systems such as backup batteries and solar panels for farms, homes, and businesses. More info at cromwellsolar.com. You are listening to Kansas Public Radio from the University of Kansas for KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, KANV and KANV HD1 Ellsberg Junction City, and KANQ Chanute. Online at kansaspublicradio.org.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Ryland Barton. A program that deputizes local police to help ICE with immigration enforcement has grown rapidly since President Trump took office again. As NPR's Meg Anderson reports, Homeland Security is offering millions of dollars in incentives to police who participate.
DHS has promised to reimburse officer salaries, give bonuses to police for finding undocumented people, and money for new cars and equipment like fingerprint scanners and license plate readers. A recent report estimated that if every police agency gets what they've been promised, it could add up to as much as $2 billion this year alone. But DHS hasn't released much information on who has actually gotten funds. Felicity Rose with the advocacy group Forward .us says normally federal grants go through an open process and are tracked closely.
It's very, very concerning that there's so little transparency in this money.
DHS declined to give NPR more specifics. Meg Anderson, NPR News.
Campaign staffers bet on their own candidates and made thousands of dollars on prediction markets. As NPR's Luke Garrett reports, staffers use inside campaign information to bet with an edge and win big.
Two campaign staffers granted anonymity for fear of retribution said the method is simple. Campaign staffers would get an unreleased poll, use it to buy advantageous event contracts, and then sell their contracts once the poll was released and their contract price soared. One staffer admitted to doing this themselves. They won thousands, and their bet was verified by prediction market data reviewed by NPR. Current law bars prediction market bettors from using insider information to make money. But former commissioner at the Commodities Future Trading Commission, Kristen Johnson, doubted that the agency could police, quote, election positions. These bets raise serious questions about how campaign operatives can turn private information into a quick payday amid an unsettled legal landscape for prediction markets. Luke Garrett, NPR News, Washington.
A cyber attack took the widely used education platform Canvas offline today. NPR's Janaki Mehta reports the hack seems to have affected schools across the nation.
When students around the U.S. tried to access Canvas, they instead got a message that appeared to be from a hacker group known as Shiny Hunters. The message warned schools if they don't contact the group to negotiate a settlement by May 12th, the hackers would leak, quote, everything. The group claims it has access to data belonging to 9,000 schools and 275 million students and staff. Colleges, as well as many K-12 schools, have released public alerts about the breach. Instructure, the company that owns Canvas, has confirmed a series of breaches over the last few days that have potentially released student names, emails, ID numbers, and messages. The company did not immediately respond to NPR's request for comment, but it is posting updates about the breach on its website. Janaki Mehta, NPR News.
This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, supporting books, radio, podcasts, film, television, theater, and more to bridge science and the humanities. The time is 8:04. This is Kansas Public Radio.
Stardate May 7th. A massive star in the Andromeda Galaxy might have tried to blow itself to bits, but it failed. Instead, almost the entire star collapsed to form a black hole about 5 times the mass of the Sun. Astronomers discovered the possible misfire while combing through observations by NEOWISE, a space telescope that wrapped up its work a couple of years ago. They found an object that brightened dramatically at infrared wavelengths, which are invisible to the human eye, then slowly faded again. Earlier observations at visible wavelengths showed a supergiant star, perhaps 100,000 times as bright as the sun. But as the infrared peaked and faded, the visible light faded completely. The star simply vanished. The astronomers concluded that the event was a failed supernova. The star stopped producing nuclear reactions in its core, so the core collapsed. A shockwave plowed through the star's outer layers, blasting their gas outward. In most cases, such a shockwave creates a titanic explosion, a supernova. But this blast wasn't powerful enough to overcome the core's gravitational pull, so almost all the gas fell back onto the core, making it massive enough to form a black hole. A little material did escape. It formed a wide disk of gas and dust around the dying star. Energy from the star made it shine brightly in the infrared. A short flare-up that waned as the supergiant star collapsed and faded from sight. You can follow us on social media and through our website, stardate.org. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Billy Henry.
the overture to the opera Ruslan and Ludmilla by Mikhail Glinka on Kansas Public Radio. That's the Boston Pops Orchestra under the direction of John Williams. Good evening, I'm Kay McIntyre. Thanks for joining me for the next hour of classical music on Kansas Public Radio. Support for KPR comes from the University of Kansas, serving Kansas and the world through research, economic development, and education. Information about KU programs and initiatives is at ku.edu. Kansas Public Radio listeners are engaged in their communities, and they support businesses that support public radio. When you become a KPR sponsor, you can reach those listeners. Learn more about making that connection at sponsorship.kansaspublicradio.org. Later this hour, Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition. But right now, it's Haydn's Piano Sonata No. 30, performed by Yevgeny Kissin on Kansas Public Radio. Joseph Haydn's Piano Sonata No. 30, performed by Yevgeny Kissin on Kansas Public Radio. From the University of Kansas, we're 91.5 Lawrence and 99.5 Manhattan. You can find us online at kansaspublicradio.org. Support for classical music on KPR comes from the Watkins Museum of History, celebrating America's 250th anniversary with various museum and historic sites. Information about Finding Freedom, the Promise of 1776 in Douglas County, Kansas, at watkinsmuseum.org. For the rest of this hour, Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition, performed by the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra, under the direction of Andre Previn on Kansas Public Radio. Modest Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition on Kansas Public Radio, written for piano by Mussorgsky and then orchestrated by Maurice Ravel. It's performed here by the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra and conducted by Andre Previn. Support for classical music on KPR comes from the historic Eldridge Hotel, celebrating Mother's Day with a three-course as well as a children's menu, Sunday, May 10th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Reservations available at 785-838-5503. From the University of Kansas, it's your place to find classical music and NPR news. We're Kansas Public Radio, KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence 91.5, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia 89.7, KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City 91.3, KANQ Chanute 90.3.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Ryland Barton. Iran says the U.S. violated the ceasefire by targeting Iranian ships and non-military sites along the Islamic Republic's southern coast. That's according to Iran's state broadcaster, citing a military official. U.S. Central Command says it targeted Iranian military sites after Iran launched missiles, drones, and small boats at three American warships transiting the Strait of Hormuz. President Trump said the ceasefire was still in effect, telling ABC News Tonight the strikes were, quote, a love tap. Today was the deadline for the Supreme Court, or that the Supreme Court set for briefs in the latest cases about abortion access. As NPR's Selena Simmons-Duffin reports, even though the case is called Louisiana versus FDA, the FDA did not file a brief at all.
Last Friday, an appeals court ruling ended telemedicine access to mifepristone, one of the medications used for abortion and the treatment of miscarriages. Then Justice Samuel Alito put that order on pause for 7 days and instructed the parties involved to file briefs. Now all the briefs are in. Two drug makers explained why they think the Supreme Court should preserve telemedicine access. Louisiana explained why it thinks the justices should suspend that access. The Trump administration's Department of Justice, which represents the Food and Drug Administration, did not file anything. Supreme Court watchers say that's very unusual, especially since FDA's power to regulate prescription medicine is a key issue in this case. Selena Simmons-Duffin, NPR News, Washington.
Chief Justice John Roberts says Supreme Court justices are making decisions based on the law, not their personal preferences. His remarks to a conference of lawyers come a week after the court handed down a ruling weakening the Voting Rights Act. The High Court has also expanded gun rights and overturned the constitutional right to abortion in recent years. Public confidence in the Supreme Court is at a low point. A trade court has dealt another blow to President Trump's tariff policy. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the court found Trump was wrong to impose a blanket 10% tariff on most goods the U.S. imports.
President Trump ordered these new tariffs to replace an earlier round of import taxes that were struck down in February by the U.S. Supreme Court. But the Court of International Trade says these new tariffs are also unlawful. Trump relied on a statute that authorizes tariffs only under certain conditions, and two out of three judges concluded those conditions don't currently exist. It's not clear how wide-reaching this decision will be. For now, it applies only to two importers who challenge the tariffs, along with the state of Washington. The administration's already in the process of refunding tens of billions of dollars collected under the original tariffs, struck down by the Supreme Court, and it continues to explore other options to impose new tariffs. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
British voters cast ballots in local elections that could determine the fate of Prime Minister Keir Starmer. His Labour Party is bracing for losses. Results will start coming in overnight, with most due tomorrow afternoon. A poor result could lead to a leadership challenge against Starmer from his own party. This is NPR. A pilot program in New York City uses plug-in batteries that can power air conditioners during peak demand, helping take pressure off the grid at its most stressed moments while still keeping residents cool. The devices are about the size of a microwave, charge when electricity demand is low, and then run window AC units for a few hours when demand spikes. The Southern Poverty Law Center is pleading not guilty to federal criminal charges. NPR's Debbie Elliott reports the Alabama-based civil rights organization was arraigned today in Montgomery federal court.
The Southern Poverty Law Center's interim CEO, Brian Fair, entered the not guilty plea to charges including wire fraud, bank fraud, and conspiracy to commit money laundering. At issue is its work tracking hate groups. The U.S. Justice Department accuses the SPLC of fraud fraudulently using some $3 million in donations to secretly pay informants in right-wing extremist groups, including the Ku Klux Klan. Fair says the allegations are politically motivated and provably wrong, and that information gathered from informants was used to dismantle hate groups. Acting U.S. Attorney Kevin Davidson says there's nothing vindictive about the prosecution. Debbie Elliott, NPR News, Montgomery.
The NCAA will expand its March Madness basketball tournaments by 8 teams each next season. The new 76-team brackets will jam 8 extra games into the first week of the men's and women's tournaments. It's the first expansion of the tournaments in 15 years. This is NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One, offering their dining and entertainment card, Saver. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
Thank you.
tenor saxophonist Hank Mobley kicking off Jazz in the Night tonight, a real tasty tune called An Aperitif here on KPR. From the vinyl release on Blue Note Records, third season, recorded in 1967, but as with many sessions Blue Note did in the 1960s, didn't get issued for a while. This one came out in 1980, the album Third Season, and a seven-piece band. Hank on tenor sax, Lee Morgan on trumpet, James Pauling alto sax, and guitarist Sonny Greenwich with Cedar Walton, Walter Booker, Billy Higgins, piano, bass, and drums. A typically fine Hank Mobley session on Blue Note from the 60s. And we've got another tenor saxophonist on Blue Note from the 60s in just a bit. Tenor saxophonist Joe Henderson will hear from his LP, Our Thing, his second album as the leader on Blue Note, with singer Dee Dee Bridgewater next here on Kansas Public Radio's Jazz in the Night. Support for Jazz in the Night on KPR comes from Love Garden Sound, the vinyl record and CD store sponsoring the Vinyl Vault Hour on Jazz in the Night. Store details and buying policies at lovegardensounds.com. And I was down there 2 or 3 months ago and came across an album that I had never heard of. Singer Dee Dee Bridgewater, an early album from her, 1974, recorded in Tokyo, called Afro Blue. And as it turns out, this album had never been released in the United States, even up till now. I've got it on a LP reissue out of England from 2020. And it's mostly Dee Dee's regular band with her brothers, Cecil on trumpet, Ron on tenor sax and flute, and some other percussion, Roland Hanna piano, George Mraz bass, and then the Japanese drummer Motohiko Hino. And we're going to hear the arrangement by Cecil Bridgewater of Mongo Santa Maria's Afro Blue with the lyrics of Oscar Brown Jr., the marvelous singer Dee Dee Bridgewater on KPR.
Soul is from. I hear a hand beat on a drum. Shades of daylight, cocoa hue, rich as the night, Afro blue. Elegant boy, beautiful girl, dancing for joy, delicate swirl. Shades of delight, cocoa hue, rich as the night, Afro blue. Two young lovers are face to face with undulating grace. They gently dance, then slip away to some secluded place. Shades of delight, cocoa hue, rich as the night, Afro blue.
the sigh, passionately tinted of reply, shades of daylight, Coco, you rich as the